Hey, we traditionally have had a habit of getting together before Pesach to share certain thoughts and ideas for the upcoming Chag HaPesach. What has been unique in this particular style and our share through the years in our Haggadah thoughts to ponder is that through the years we've also tried very desperately to bring to light the memories of many of the great ones who have passed away in previous course of the previous year. And so, although the thoughts that I'd like to share tonight are far and away not comprehensive, they are certainly going to be comprehensive of a number of great individuals and representatives of certain major lessons and ideas that I'd like us to take away from the year 5784, from the end of Pesach 5783. And we'll do it carrying ourselves through the Haggadah shel Pesach. Mari Rabbi Rav Shachter used to always remind us that. At least in the name of the Rav Soloveitchik, there is a deeper level of the understanding of the Haggadah, and that's perhaps why we follow the idea of Bikurim. The idea being that we are creating a perspective on Jewish history and Jewish destiny. And of course, there are a lot of people and a lot of places and a lot of times where people will be connecting from creation from Yetzias Mitzrayim all the way up to the present time and beyond Ad Bias Goel Tzedek. And so therefore, just because they have passed doesn't mean that their Torah has passed and their contributions have passed. And so therefore, I want to bring them to your attention and to the attention that you might want to share with those around your Seder. So we begin, of course, with Kiddush, and of course we make the statement Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Am, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen us from among all other nations. And one of the things I think we need to ask ourselves is, why is the chosen nation status so important that we introduce it on our Yamim Tovim in particular, this particular year, when we're thinking so much about that which has been thrown in our faces and the question of whether we are Adayin Am HaNivchar? What gives us that status of Am HaNivchar? So Rav Aaron Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk explained that when we joined up with Hashem, it wasn't just that we chose to listen to Hashem, but that we also chose ourselves as well. And a nation that chooses to see its potential learns to believe in itself. And if it doesn't know its potential, then it doesn't know itself. And soon it will forget itself as well. In fact, the late great Rav Moshe Tzuria was the former Mashgiach Ruchni at Yeshivat Shalavim for 19 years. He was an incredible walking encyclopedia of Talmudic thought. He wrote over 49 Sfarim. Each one is breathless in depth and breadth. And although he was relatively unknown to people outside of those circles, he had this tremendous impact on his Talmidim and their families. And he added that when it came to choosing Am Yisrael as the continuation of his creation after Adam HaRishon sinned, it was not based on the actions we did per se, but rather because Hashem chose us for better or for worse. This was true even in Mitzrayim, when we were on the lowest level of Tumah, and still notwithstanding, Hashem chose us. And the same can be said for our situation today. No matter how bad and bleak it looks for us, he still chooses us, and he always has, whether we fully understand why immediately, or we need to look a little bit deeper at ourselves as well. So lesson number one from Moshe Tzuria is, Asher Bachar Banu Mikolam, he chose us. We need to understand why, better ourselves, and make sure that we hold on to ourselves and look at ourselves positively as well. After the Kiddush and the Urchatz Karpas Yachatz, and we begin a Magid, and of course we make a funky statement: Hashata Hacha Lishana Abba Bi'arad Yisrael, Hashata Avdei Lishana Abba B'nei Chorim, and then we ask four questions. Now we say Lishana Abba Bi'arad Yisrael. Even in Israel, they make that statement. What's up with the whole question and answer part of the Seder? We're told that the entire Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim needs to be told in a series of questions and answers. Why are questions and answers so important to the Seder story? So there was another great one who passed away this year, Rav Dr. Shalom Gold. Rav Shalom Gold was Kishmo Kein Hu. He was an individual who was incredible, building communities in Chutz La'aretz and in Eretz Yisrael. First, he built up the Ner Yisrael Yeshiva in Toronto, and he developed the congregation B'nai Torah in Willowdale. And then he became the Rav of the Young Israel of West Hempstead in 1971. He was one of the first builders of an Eruv in North America. And then in 1982, he moved to Eretz Israel, and he built and served as the Rav of Kehilat Zichron Yosef in Har Nof. And in 84, founded the Avram Silver Jerusalem College for Adults, which merged into the Israel Center. And He emerged in 19 and 2002. Rabbi Gold had one very, very consistent theme that went through everything that he did, and that theme was the importance of Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael. So here he explained that one of the most egregious errors of the Meraglim was when they observed the land of Israel, they didn't probe what they saw sufficiently and properly. They didn't ask enough questions. And as Rabbi Gold says, the ongoing search for truth in life requires us to ask proper questions, because questions allow us not to get swept up with the party line and simply swallow a story as given. And in modern times, boy, do we need to pay attention to that. And Rav Gold, Kedarko, added that when he meets people who ask their Rav all sorts of questions, rarely does he find them asking their Rav as to whether one ought to live in Eretz Yisrael. And he suggested that we ought to ask our real questions, especially on Seder night, as we tell the story of how we got here and figure out how we can go further, how we can get into Eretz Yisrael. You know, ultimately, that is the goal. Ultimately, we say, ultimately, we say, there's a continuation beyond the Seder. And those things have to be on our minds as we sit around the Seder table. We finish the Manish Tana, we say Avadim Hayinu, and then we go live to B'nai Brak, where a bunch of rabbis were sitting. Until their students came and said, "Our rabbis, it's time for Kriya Shema in the morning." It's interesting to contrast the rabbis described here with Paro's response at the first Pesach, whereas the children like to sing Paro be pajamas b'emsa alayla, that Paro went to sleep and he got up in the middle of the night, as we say in Chumash Shmos in Perakit Beis Pasuk Lamed, Vayakam Paro alayla. From Baruch Mordechai Mizrachi, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael and a prolific, fiery, and inspiring teacher, it was incredible to have a chance to listen to Baruch Mordechai. And he explains that Paro understood what was going to happen, but he chose to go to sleep anyway. He refused to do anything about his situation. Sleep was not an acceptance. He went to sleep to hide from his reality. But Baruch Mordechai adds that it's incredible to him that sleep is often an excuse for missing Kriya Shema, which is a more Paro type of behavior that denies the reality of Hashem's sovereignty over the world at large and over each individual specifically, as dictated in the very Shema that's being ignored. The contrast is what happened in B'nai Brak. In B'nai Brak, the rabbis didn't do that. In B'nai Brak, the rabbis made sure to say Kriya Shema. The capstone to a Seder experience is to recognize that we have a connection with Hashem and that we have a responsibility to go ahead and recognize that Hashem controls the world, that we accept his malchus, we accept his sovereignty over it and over us as well. We go ahead and we start the process of singing about the Arba Banim, and we say, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Torah Li Amo Yisrael. And many of the commentators on the Haggadah note that this paragraph, Baruch HaMakom, is a pseudo Birchas HaTorah for the obligation to highlight the unique Torah experience of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the fact that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the telling of the story, is above just the regular responsibilities that we have of Talmud Torah. So then what then do we highlight when we give us Hashem a bracha for giving us the Torah? Baruch Shanasan Torah Li'amo Yisrael. If there's a step above, why are we moving backwards? I believe there's a certain insight from Rav Meir Hershkowitz, who was a unassuming Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva Beis Binyamin of Stanford. He passed away earlier this year, and I think a certain insight of his might shed some light. You know, there at a particular dinner for his yeshiva, he graded one of his talmidim who was a Rosh Yeshiva, and he told Rameir that he, this Talmud Rosh Yeshiva, was teaching the Perek Cheska Sabbatim, the third Perek of Bava Basra, and he was using as his guide the notes of the shiurim of Rameir Hershkowitz. In essence, he said, Rebbe, I'm teaching them Rav Meir's Torah. Or Rav Meir Hershkowitz is my Torah. Mine? It's not my Torah. It's the Eibishter's Torah. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Kol HaNishama Tehalal Ka, that the entire soul should give praise to Hashem. And Chazal and the Medrash say, Al Kol Nishima Tehalal Ka, for every breath you have to thank Hashem. So how can I take any credit for any Torah I say if it's all Hashem's in the first place? There's no other night or lesson of Torah learning where this is more apparent than in the Torah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, where it becomes abundantly clear that we owe our everything, including our privilege of learning Torah, to Hashem and his having shared his prized possession, the Torah, with us. We're told Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah that the Torah speaks to in front of four children. And Rav Shimon Alster was the Rosh Yeshiva of Cliffwood Yeshiva and the Rav of Torah Tefillah and Flatbush, and a former Maggid chair in the Misifta of Long Beach. Rav Shimon Alster noted that it's the parents who set a tone in the home as to what is important in life and what's not. He mentioned the story of a person who hosted a Baba Verevitzin and apologized for the mess of the home. What was the mess? It consisted of piles of Sfarim that were on the table. The Rebbetzin said, Sfarim are never a mess. And in our lives, Rabbi Alster added, how we set a tone makes a difference on how our kids take the lead. Therefore, you shouldn't approach a Shabbos or Yontif meal with a half-prepared vort. But rather, you have to have preparation from opening a real sefer. It sets a tone about the seriousness of Torah life and Torah in life. And we talk about the four sons, and the one that obviously creates the most stir is that of the Rasha. And we're told, Rasha Mahu Omer, and you ever wonder, why do you bother to listen to a Rasha? After all, if he's not interested, why do we bother to listen if his whole goal is to be oppositional to the entire process? So the late, great Panovitcher Rosh Yeshiva of Gershon Edelstein, and he was not only the Panovitcher Rosh Yeshiva, the Nasi of the Bada Yeshivos, head of the Degel HaTorah party, he believed that listening, as a parent in particular, makes a huge difference to a child, no matter where the child is holding. In fact, at the time that Rav Gershon Edelstein passed, it was reported that he had just encouraged the father to take a stroll with his son on Shabbos, even if the son would be breaking Shabbos by smoking a cigarette. Rabbi Edelstein told the father to continue the walks and to build your relationship with your son and have fun with him. You're not his rabbi. Be his caring father who loves him no matter what he does. They said that there were thousands of Jews who are no longer observant who attended Rav Gershon Edelstein's funeral in appreciation for keeping their families together. Maybe that's how you blunt the teeth of a sharp argument from the Rasha, with love and with listening. You should open his mouth. One of my Rabbanim HaMasmichim, Rav Zvulun Chalak, Zecher Tzadik Lebrach, was the Menal and Dinet Reitz, and the venerated Rav of the Young Israel Mashalu Parkway. He once noted that it's interesting that we note the idea of At being in the feminine, while Psach happens to be masculine. And how do we make sense of a contradiction like that? And he explained by telling a story about the famous story about Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev and how on Rosh Hashanah in his shul, they couldn't get the tekiyas to go up to Shemayim. And the Rebbe was very troubled about that, the Berdichevar. And so it was then that unexpectedly a nondescript peasant who was unknown to the Rebbe or the worshippers came into shul. And incredibly, it wasn't long after he came that the sounds of the shofar and the tefillos, which until then were immobile in the shtibo, all of a sudden started to move up, reaching towards Shemayim. Turns out the peasant didn't know how to daven and had been repeating the Aleph Beis over and over again, asking Hashem to work the letters into the right words and sentences. The Rebbe, Rav Levi Yitzchak, then proclaimed to the shul, "You should just know that the prayers of all of us, the tekios, the truos of the shofar, they're all soaring on the wings of this peasant's Aleph Beis." Well, it seems that when this story was told by a certain Stalin Karlin Chassid in Lvov, a certain woman cried out that the people in Lvov didn't even know the Aleph Beis. And so the Chassid put his talus over his head and got the people to say all of the letters out loud. By the time he got to Tuf, there were 2,500 roaring voices that had started to repeat the Aleph Beis in one of the most moving tefillos that the Stalin Karlin Chassid had ever heard. Zulin added that when it came to the She'ena Yodea L'Shol, the child who doesn't really know how to ask questions, he doesn't know where to begin. Rabbi Chalav said, even the Aleph Beis is strange to this child. And so therefore, the author of the Haggadah advises us, at psachilo, you, meaning the parents or teachers, open his mouth and his mind. Stimulate him to ask the right questions. Teach him how to assimilate the answers of who he is and what Pesach means. And so Rabbi Chalav explained that with the story of Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev and the Aleph Beis, the at over here, which compromise of an Aleph, the first letter of the Aleph Beis, and the Tuf of the last letter, doesn't necessarily refer to the second person feminine, but to Aleph Beis at Psachlo, with a child who doesn't, who's a Shene Yodea B'Shol, who doesn't know how to even ask. You begin with at the Aleph Beis, from Aleph to Tuf. You teach him from there, and you get him to be stimulated and ask more questions, and in the process, become more inspired. We're told that in regard to the Haggadah, we're told that I gave Seir, attain the Sosa. And why do we mention Esav at the Seder and not Yishmael? Why does Yishmael not get mentioned? So Rav Aaron Schechter, the former Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, suggested that there were important people who affected Jewish life who were descendants of Esav. For instance, the Emperor Antonius was an impactful descendant of Rivka, who positively impacted Jewish and world destiny. But there's no equivalent in the descendants of Hagar, and why is that? So Rav Aaron Schechter suggested that this is built on the idea of Gareisha Sa'ama, where Sarah insisted that Hagar and her descendants be totally separated from the Jews and thus from world destiny. And so therefore Yishmael can't be at the Seder. He doesn't belong there because tonight we talk about Jewish destiny. And then we're told that we are told that Yadoa that the Jews are going to be enslaved and they're going to be there for 400 years. And then thereafter, they will go out with a tremendous wealth. Rav Zvulun Charlap, again, Rabbi Charlap used to highlight the importance not only of Yetzias Mitzrayim to his grandchildren, but also the importance of Rechush Gadol. In fact, he used to tell his children that you can go hunting. You may not be able to look for the Afikoman when you go to Tzizedi on the second days of Yontif, but you certainly can go look for the Rechush Gadol. And Rabbi Charlap noted Rechush Gadol came in two stages. The first was when the Egyptians sent Bnei Yisrael out with expensive farewell mementos that they borrowed. But the second stage, when Bnei Yisrael picked up from the shores of the Yamsuf on Shvi Shel Pesach, a week after the initial Exodus, they took all this tremendous armor of the Mitzrayim. The armor surpassed by far the wealth that they collected in Mitzrayim. In fact, Moshe had to coerce Bnei Yisrael to leave. Ayasa Moshe's Yisrael were told that Moshe had to get them to move. And there are two explanations for the need for coercion over here. Rashi says that Moshe literally had to tear them away because they were so engrossed in accumulating the expensive remnants of the Egyptian cavalry. But the Zohar HaKadosh understands that the Jews didn't want to leave from the Yamsuf because never before had they sensed so visibly and unmistakably the presence of the Shekhinah. And in that regard, Rabbi Charlap used to tell us in the name of his grandfather, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Charlap, who saw no contradiction between Rashi and the Zohar. There are two tests of faith. There's the Nisayon HaOni, the test of affliction, and then there was the Nisayon HaOsher, the test of affluence. When dark times hit us, it's often difficult to recognize Hashem's presence and believe fully in His ultimate guiding hand. However, an even more difficult test is the test of affluence, to believe Hashem and listen to His word when we're well off. A person's recognition of Hashem, even in affluent times, can be as an even more sublime vision than in the times of adversity. And so Bnei Yisrael's powerful awareness of Hashem came precisely because of their preoccupation with the riches at the sea. And that's what Chazal mean when they say, Masha'rasa Shivcha, what the plain maidservant saw at the sea, Leroy Yecheskel Bembuzi B'chol Nevuaso. We're expected, Rabbi Chalap would say, to feel the Shekhinah when we're flushed with Rechosh Gadol. And indeed, it's possible for us to reach higher peaks of Yedias Hashem, of knowing Hashem, when we're wealthy rather than when we are poor. And that is a critical lesson for us in modern times, where the wealth of the average human being is at a much higher level than it's ever been in the history of the world. This year, with everybody out and concerned with the situation in Israel, Chief Rabbi David Lau implored Jews worldwide to daven for the hostages in Israel prior to the recitation of the Ishamda. And I think it's critical that we mention that tefillah as well. He wrote a tefillah. We mention it in our word before Shabbos Parshas Tazria, where he said, "Yi ratzom mitzrayim." It should be the will of our Father in heaven who took His nation, Am Yisrael, out of Mitzrayim. Who yivarech v'yitzor esachinu v'achyosinu ha'chatufim ha'asurim b'kli barzel, yechazik nafsham v'emunasam, yishmarei. Hashem should bless and save our brothers and sisters, the hostages who are held in iron chains. He should strengthen their souls and faith and protect them from all harm and sickness. And Yachmo HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have mercy on his sons and daughters who are looking for his salvation and annul all cruel decrees. And they should certainly come back from darkness to light, from the abyss of captivity to eternal freedom, and return them safely to their families and homes. And then the tefillah ends. Ana, Hashem, please. Nita achva shalom v'reis v'leiv kulam. May Hashem, may you plant brotherhood, peace, and friendship in everyone's hearts. Aser kenav v'sinaschinim. May you remove jealousy and baseless hatred. Ufros aleinu sukkah shlomecha. And may you spread over us the sheltering tabernacle of your peace. V'nizke b'karv lomar l'fanecha shira chadasha. And may we soon merit to sing before you a shira chadasha, something special that we'll say on our geula. Please consider offering that tefillah before you say v'hishamda this year. And then while we're getting into the v'hishamda, and you might bring this up when you bring up the arba kosos, or when you spill the wine at Dam Va'esh V'Timras Asham, Yushami notes that there are four cups that parallel the four languages of freedom, and the Rabbana note that they're also a parallel of the four cups of Poranios, of pain and suffering, that Hashem will ultimately pay back to the nations of the world who tortured us. And the Pnei Moshe, the commentary on the Yerushalmi, notes that the Rabbanan are not arguing with the first opinion, they're just adding to it. And that's why we pour off wine at the point of mentioning the Makos, as we see this as part of the punishment of the Mitzrayim, and don't rejoice at the downfall of our enemies. But we also pour off wine at the time that we say Dam Va'esh V'Timros Hashem, which refers to a later time. So why are we mentioning and being distressed somewhat by a future that hasn't happened yet? So the late great Mashgiach of Lakewood, Rabbi Matisyo Salomon, suggested that there's a connection between the cups of the past and the cups of the future. The Medrash notes that there were four geulas, four redemptions in Mitzrayim, even prior to leaving it. In fact, the Medrash commentary, Matnos Guna, identifies an Avodas Perech, and the throwing of the male babies into the Nile, and the shechting of the babies for Paro's house, and also the not giving the Jews straw for the bricks. That makes four. And each of these redemptions, when each one of those decrees was annulled, helped the Jews sense that the redemption was coming, just as we will, when the Geula of the future will come too. And that's why we lift up the kos for Vihishamda. Normally we don't lift up kosos, but we lift the kos here to show us and strengthen us, even in the Geulas, that there are Muna-inspiring moments and experiences of life that we need to raise our cup to toast Hashem with and strengthen ourselves in the process until we get to the ultimate Geula. We're told, that they were Mitzuyanim. The Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar notes that the Jewish people stood out in Mitzrayim insofar as they didn't change their names, their dress, or their language. Or Baruch Mordechai Ezrahi, whom we mentioned before, asks, why was it that these things were the basis of the merit to leave Mitzrayim? After all, don't we find Malachim stupefied as to why Hashem would save us over the Egyptians? Halalu ovdei avodah zara, v'halalu ovdei avodah zara. Put it in Rabbi Baruch Mordechai's words, if you wear a shtreimel, that's good enough. Why? So Rabbi Baruch Mordechai explains that there's a huge difference between actions, the masim of a person, and his or her essence, or what you and I would call the mahus. While beaten down in slavery, it's not likely that the Jewish people would be able to express their own identities in any action, because any sense of public liberty and freedom had been taken away from them. However, when they were among their own, there was no one who dared speak in a foreign language. None named their children Ramses or Pharaoh. In that regard, they remained distinguished, and in that, the essence of distinction, that serves as the basis of Geula. We need to know we're different. And then because we are different, that's how we are going to go ahead and access and merit our freedom as well. We're also told, Be'osos ze'amateh. We say that the signs refer to the mateh. And Rabbi Elimelech Wasserman, Hashem Yim Kon Damo, if you remember Rabbi Elimelech Wasserman, he was a Belzer Chassid who learned in Vision at Tzchaiva and then became a Dayan and was a respected member of the Ashdod Beis Din. And his humility was quite apparent, but he was murdered by Hamas terrorists while waiting for a bus from Yerushalayim to Ashdod to go to court earlier this year. So Rabbi Elimelech, Hashem Yim Kon Damo, notes that in the olden days, people would go to tzaddikim to perform all sorts of signs in order to help them through life challenges, whether it would be in order to find a shidduch or to get parnasa or a solution to childbirth issues, etc. The signs were successful since the goal was that the signs would also inspire the people to remain on the derech, meaning derech Hashem. However, unfortunately, people took the easy way out. They chose emuna and ran without any real commitment to a new path in life. In other words, they chose cheap belief without avoda. There, today, the signs and segulos need proper avoda with them, and that's what Chazal say. When they say that in the time of the Mashiach, the osos will be batel, and the only source of salvation will be al derech ha'avoda, so suggests the author of the Keser Shem Tov. We have a certain style where we have to step up to the plate and realize that it's not just going to be that we believe, it's going to be that we do. And of course, Am Yisrael continues to do, and in its merit, may we all be zocheh to the Geula Shleima. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim alayla zani v'lo malach." Why do we need Hashem to be directly involved in specifically Makas Bechoros? And why did Bnei Yisrael need to be involved in the Makkah by separating themselves via placing blood on the doorpost and the lintel? Didn't Hashem know that He could separate between Bnei Yisrael and the Mitzrayim? He did so in Makas Dever. V'flo Hashem bein machane Mitzrayim ubein machane Yisrael. So David Schwartz, Hashem yinkom damo. David Schwartz was a alum of Yeshiva Sar Etzion, who gave his life for his Medina, for Medinat Yisrael, Am Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. He was a particularly warm individual whose heart was radiated happiness and goodness, and he was raised as a Dati Leumi individual, together with his chavrusa and fellow officer Yakir Hexter, and so many others who have given up their lives for Am Yisrael. So David Schwartz, when he got married, put out a sefer, the David Baruch Nafshi, and David in the sefer explains that there were two aspects to the Makos. The first was the fact that Hashem had a need to redeem Bnei Yisrael from slavery. The second was to make them into his Bnei Bechori Yisrael. In other words, you and I were supposed to be able to become Bechori Yisrael. Makos Bechoros, therefore, had both aspects into it. The first, to redeem us. The second, to let us know that Hashem included us. And with the Makkah, Hashem chose Am Yisrael as Am Hashem and took us from the 49 degrees of Tumah, effectuating his fulfillment of the promise that he made to the Avos. And so to meet that need, Hashem brings this Makkah himself. However, it wasn't enough for a Jew to be passive at that moment. He also had to do something to show that he wanted to join Am HaNivchar. He needed to participate through some action that he or she was on board. And that's why the blood had to be put on the doorpost. As David Hashem Yom Kodem Damo added, the great lesson for us in this is that we now understand that in order to be full, meaningful partners as part of Hashem's people, it's by no means enough for us to rest on the side and preserve the mitzvos like a servant who simply follows the will of the master. Rather, it's upon ourselves to accomplish Hashem's will proactively for the purpose of fulfilling our mission of being a proactive and creative nation, as our lives in this world shouldn't be like a leaf that's blown about by a wind. A thought process that drives one to think about the essence of being Jewish is only about preserving the Torah and its commandments, and that exempts one from constant striving for betterment of society, pushes us away from our central purpose. We are Mamleches Kohanim and Goy Kadosh. We have a responsibility to realize that no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, we are the Am HaNivchar, and we are supposed to be able to give in the process. And David gave. He gave his very essence and being. The David Baruch Nashi Es Hashem. For David's sake, Hashem should give a bracha not only to his wife and his family, but for all of us as well. Now, we've been focusing a lot about Yetzias Mitzrayim, but towards the end of Maggid, we also mentioned how many Makos took place Al Hayam. Rav Shimon Oster, who is again the Clifford Rosh Hashiva, notes that the Gemara notes three versions about how Bnei Yisrael sang Shira at the Yamsuf. One version says that Hashem sang the, that Moshe Rabbeinu sang the Shira, and the people listened using a process we call Shomei HaKoneh. One says that it was a responsive process. Moshe sang, and then the people sang the chorus, the refrain. The third opinion is that they all got such an inspiration from Moshe and from the events that they just witnessed, they all sang together with Ruach HaKodesh. So Rav Shimon said that this Gemara highlights three different leadership styles. Sometimes leaders do the work for us, and we listen. Sometimes they lead us from the front and tell us what to say and do. But there is a third style when a leader takes us into a circle and leads by example, encouraging others to join in with him. Rav Shimon Oster said also that the Jewish home needs to be that type of a circle, where parents get everyone involved and participate accordingly. At the very, very close to the end of Maggid, we already mentioned Rabban Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says, "Kosh lo amar shloshet var ma'ilu bePesach." If you didn't mention these three things on Pesach, you didn't fulfill your obligation, and that includes Pesach matzah umaror. While today we don't offer the carbon Pesach, why wouldn't we fulfill the obligation of Seder night if we didn't mention Pesach? In other words, why do we have to say something if we're not offering it? So Gershon Neumann, who was the Rosh Yeshiva over here of Rosh Yeshiva Zichron Lima in Union, and a former Maggid Shir in Salzburg Yeshiva, and the Rav of Kal Shaarei Tefillah in Borough Park, who was such a wonderful, terrific individual. Used to daven mincha with him quite often. So he offered an insight based on a medrash in Eicha Rabbah that notes that Hashem is biyani b'merorim hirvani la'ana, that Hashem satiated me with bitterness, refers to Pesach, and it connects to Tisha B'Av. In fact, the medrash notes that utilizing the Atbash system, the day of the week of the Seder night is also the day of the week that Tisha B'Av will fall out. Now, what's the point of the medrash? So Rabbi Neumann explained that the part of the obligation of telling the Yisip or Yitzias Mitzrayim on Seder night is the obligation to complete the galus. And part of that completion involves preparing for a post-galus. And a post-galus Pesach involves the carbon Pesach. And so if you remember to include the carbon Pesach in your story, telling it on the Seder night, you're actually involved in the process and bringing the galus to completion. If you don't, so the night of Pesach will just be a continued observance of galus. It's a night predictive of Tisha B'Av. The end of galus involves a preparation and a yearning for Geula. And Be'ezras Hashem, we're almost there. We just need to get there. We're told before we start saying the Hallel, Otzianu me'avdus l'cheirus. Hashem took us from slavery to freedom. What kind of freedom are we celebrating on Pesach? So Rabbi Raymond Apple, who was a member of the RCA, he served as chief minister of the Great Synagogue in Sydney, Australia, and he moved to Eretz Yisrael on his retirement. So Rabbi Apple noted that freedom in the Torah is identified by many words, including dror, right, which appears on the Liberty Bell, and appears also in the context of a listing of birds in the Torah, the swallow. And in the context of the bird, the Gemara Kad, the Torah says that just as the swallow is able to soar and live wherever it wants, freedom is also the liberty to do the same, to which Rabbi Apple added that freedom is the ability to live and play as one wishes. In other words, freedom is the ability and right to be oneself and uphold one's own ethos. Of course, that's not real freedom if one wants to be able to live under Hashem's Torah. And so if that's the case, how does one live within his or her ethos? So Rabbi Apple explained that leaving nothing to Hashem is arrogant, but leaving too much to him is abdication. We need to realize that we lie somewhere in between. We lie somewhere within the right to be involved in freedom. The last thought I want to leave you with, it's absolutely the last thought, is Adhena Azarunu Rachamecha Velo Azavunu Chasadecha. In the Hallel HaGadol of Nishmas that we say, we mention two ideas. Hashem, until now, your rachamim, your mercy has helped us, and your chesed hasn't left us. From Gershon Edelstein, again, the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva notes that rachamim refers to Hashem's helping of someone in dire straits, and chasde Hashem, or when Hashem helps us, even when the straits aren't dire. Sometimes we have to get to enjoy Hashem's chesed, when we might not just merit his rachamim too. And to all that, we note that Hashem's rachamim have helped us until now, and his chesed never left us. We add to this recognition that we hope that Hashem should please never leave us lanetzah. Rabbi Edelstein quoted in the name of the Gra that whatever kindness we have received until now has been due to Hashem's chesed and rachamim. And we hope that despite that we might not deserve it, we hope that rachamim and chesed will continue just as it has thus far. And hence the need for the tefillah, and the tefillah that it should never stop Lo Netzach, in Olam Hazeh, certainly, and more importantly, for Olam Haba. We have been in such a need for Hashem's Chesed and Hashem's Merachamim. And Be'ezras Hashem, as we approach Chag HaPesach, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Titcheinu Lo Netzach, and may we get there, and may we enjoy it, to get to the Geula B'mheirah V'yameinu, Chag Kosher V'sameach to all.